good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this Monday, the 4th of November.
Sorry.
It is the day before Election Day, and yeah, there's that. So we welcome you all. It's a great morning, and we thank you very much for being with us. It's great because we have a fantastic group of panelists with us, and we'll get started. We were just listening to the music of Quincy Jones, who passed away yesterday. It was announced late last night. Died at the age of 91, and we'll be hearing some of Quincy Jones's best-known works, pop mastermind and producer who was 91. So we'll be listening to that music this morning, and the playlist is online at wamc.org/roundtable. Let me introduce everyone to you so you can play the home game. Libby Post is with us, a political consultant, going to be very busy over the next 48, 72 hours.
Sort of, kind of. I mean, most of my work is done, but yes.
Yes. Now you get to just see.
Right.
Yeah. Count the.
Right. Right. Sheila's, my business partner, deals with the field. So all of my mail is done. All of, you know, just the hand holding is what I do right now.
All right. Well, it's good for you, and thank you very much for being with us. Sienna Freeman Tolbert joins us, partner with the Albany law firm of Whiteman, Osterman, and Hanna. Good morning, Sienna. How are you?
I am. I was saying I have a lot of anxiety right now. You know, it's being very nervous.
Everybody needs to calm
because
down.
You know, not only is the election happening, but also it changes our field, immigration. It's going to have a There's going to be a big impact there. So it's a lot of things to think about, but we're remaining positive and hopeful.
That's right. About all we can do at this point, right, is to do exactly that.
Well, I've been getting a lot of texts from Kamala, from the Harris campaign
about
going down to Pennsylvania and knocking on doors.
Well, people from Albany, there were buses all weekend, I think, that went down. The mayor went down. A lot of folks went down, been knocking on doors. I think they were... With all the people around, they were like knocking on 2,000 doors every 2 minutes or something like that.
Knocked on 800,000 doors on Saturday.
Which is great. So, I mean, that's what needs to happen. And the other side doesn't have a ground game like this.
No. Bucks County, Montgomery County, Chester County, those counties really need, especially the suburbs, need to be
pushed.
Addressed, yes. All right, let's say hi to our good friend, Wall Street investment banker Mark Whitman. Good morning, Mark. How are you?
Good morning, Joe. I am, as I heard someone else say, nauseously optimistic.
Yeah, nauseously optimistic. Okay.
I don't even know if I'm optimistic. I think I'm more in a neutral category. And in terms of where I think things break. And I've had discussions with people, and maybe we should talk about this at some point. But, you know, one of the keys to finance is not that we foretell the future, but that we prepare, in my case, corporate clients, for sort of either future. And I think people personally need to decide if things don't break the way they want, whichever that is, what their plan B is for whatever day this happens on.
So I agree with you, but isn't that... I know this is the opposite of the word planning, but shouldn't we like wait to see it happen first before we then, or do we have to plan now?
No, let me give you an example from finance. The people who I most enjoyed working with when everything went to heck in a handbasket were the people who walked into the room, acknowledged that there was a problem and that it stunk, and said, but here's what we're going to do to either A, change the outcome, or B, salvage what we could amidst the conditions. And I think all of us need to take on the responsibility of that leadership, whether it be at your breakfast table, around your water cooler, if you talk politics, or amongst your friends. I think everybody should be ready. I think it is entirely natural, if things don't break your way, to start looking at what countries you might move to and start talking about that. But I think that ought to be a brief conversation. And in the case of folks who are supporting Kamala Harris, as I assume the bulk of the audience is, I think it's going to be important to acknowledge what has, if it doesn't break our way, to acknowledge what's happened acknowledge emotions, and then say, hey, look, you know, these are the people that are going to be extraordinarily disadvantaged by the next Trump administration, and these are the people, and this is how I think I'm thinking about trying to help others, because I think psychologists tell us one of the most important things we can do is to put some effort towards helping others in situations when we feel really badly. I also think, and I'll tell you a little story, if I may. We were doing some research for my son's Halloween costume. He decided he wanted to be Frederick Douglass.
Oh.
And we read about Frederick Douglass. And I was amazed. I mean, can you imagine a man who lived under slavery, escaped, and then had to leave the U.S. and stay outside the U.S. until he could legally buy his own freedom because he was afraid he'd be recaptured and sent back to the South. But he still came back to the United States amongst all the carnage and destruction and still decided that he was going to work on this project called American Democracy and on behalf of it. So I mentioned this to a friend of mine, and I said, you know, there's some relevance to the situation around Trump. And they looked at me and they said, get over it. Get over yourself. There are too many people for too long the history of this country who have worked on behalf of democracy despite the fact that things didn't go their way. And it didn't even look like it was going to go their way in the near to short term. So I get it. We're all going to potentially feel extraordinarily disappointed. There will literally be carnage as a result of a Trump administration. But I think at a personal level, you need to put things in perspective and you need to be ready to do what you can. So many have shown us a great example in all sorts of minority populations in this country over our history.
Well, it is. In the meantime, we sit and we wait and we think about what the possibilities are. We read articles. I mean, this is totally what I'm doing, so I don't know whether you all are doing it or not. But you read the articles over and over and over again. You look for some little sliver of good news, and then you know keep reading, and then there's a lot of bad news, and then you try to find something else and like make you feel like a little bit better. And so I thought we would start just with the latest poll numbers that came out from Siena College and the New York Times, where Trump has improved his standing in Pennsylvania, even as late deciding voters appear to be breaking for Kamala Harris. And that headline is it's true, obviously, but I think it shows when you look at the numbers from the states, the individual states, Harris is winning 49-46% in Nevada, 48. This is according to the polls, not winning, but is leading in the polls. So my apologies. 48-46% in North Carolina. Wisconsin, 49-47%, 48-47% in Georgia, a tie in Pennsylvania, a tie in Michigan, and 49-45% in Arizona. And that doesn't even bring into account the mystery state that is Iowa.
So, it's great.
We wait and see that. It appears to be hurtling toward a photo finish, reading from the New York Times, with the final set of polls by the New York Times and Siena College finding Vice President Kamala Harris showing new strength in North Carolina and Georgia as former President Donald Trump erases her lead in Pennsylvania and maintains his advantage in Arizona. It has been decades since the polls have shown the nation facing a presidential race that is so close across so many states in both the Sun Belt and the Rust Belt. The tightly contested landscape means the race remains highly uncertain as the campaign enters its final hours. Cue the anxiety. Ms. Harris is now narrowly ahead in Nevada, North Carolina, and Wisconsin, according to the polls, while Mr. Trump leads in Arizona. The polls show them locked in a close race in Michigan, Georgia, and Pennsylvania. But the results in all seven states are within the margin of sampling area. Error, meaning neither candidate has a definitive lead in any of them. Both candidates have multiple pathways available to capture the 270 Electoral College votes required to claim victory. Assuming that polls are not dramatically underestimating the support for one or the other in such a close race, even a small systemic polling error could trip the contest decisively in either direction. Well, that ought to make you feel better, right? But there are signs that late deciders are breaking for Ms. Harris. Among the 8% of voters who said they had only recently decided on their vote, she wins that group by 55% to 44%, with Election Day nearing 11% of voters remain undecided or persuadable, down from 16% about a month ago. Libby Post.
Well, I'm feeling optimistic. And I have to, because I have to be able to get up in the morning. But I do think that there's a swing going on. I think if the Iowa poll is accurate, that is a bellwether for the middle of the country. I think Trump has stepped on it a number of times in the last week. I'm going to protect women whether they like it or not. And if anybody watched Saturday Night Live, right, and I think it was part of the cold open when he was like, yeah, we're going to grab him by the protection. You know exactly what that means. You know, to have a man who's been convicted of rape say he was going to protect women, I mean, give me a break. So I think that has had some backlash from women. I think his comments, I think it was yesterday or the day before, about it's okay to shoot the media. Also, for those who might have been on the fence, that kind of language, you know, promoting violence doesn't do any good for a candidate ever. And so, you know, I think we'll all be able to sigh a deep sigh of relief by Friday, because we're not going to know tomorrow night. We'll know some of the states tomorrow night, but it's going to take a while, especially in the states where things are tight. But if you watched 60 Minutes last night, they did a great interview with the Republican elections folks in Georgia. And they were so clear about how impossible it is to really screw up these elections, to play with the elections, to play with the results. You know, the machines are not connected to the web, despite all the conspiracy theories, all of that sort of stuff. And so, you know, the notion that, you know, oh, I won no matter what, is a bully's reaction to being punched in the nose. And that's what we're dealing with now, is a petulant child who can't believe he lost in 2020. And I think we'll see the same thing this year. Now, whether or not he then says to people, go and be violent, you know, let's do January 6th on November 16th or whatever date he would choose, remains to be seen. But we know what they're capable of. And we also have protection on our side. So we'll see if he goes that far. You know, and honestly, the notion of the enemy within, Joe, that's you and me.
Yeah.
Okay? You and I could end up in jail if this man became president, because we are the enemy within. You guys, not so much.
No. Immigration attorneys.
Yes.
Mark foreign
them.
Nationals.
Right. Mark, you're safe.
Can we all room together?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, good.
On that note.
What do you think?
I mean, I think a lot about this. What you're saying, what's the aftermath of the election and what it looks like with enforcement. And the only thing that I can remain hopeful about is that we've done this before.
Right.
In 2020, he's done these arguments. We've been to court about this. Yes, the Supreme Court has changed. But the state and local judges who litigate this initially, they have not, for the most part. And so we have those protections in place. Also, I was very encouraged by what I saw in 60 Minutes as well, with all the Secretary of States, you know, in Arizona, in Georgia.
Everyone
is making sure that their process is clean and flawless as it can be. And I think they're all setting up against these arguments. But what I thought was, you know, the poster has been on all the media lately, and I've been listening to her talk, and she seems very credible. I typically don't believe polls ever since 2016, but one of the things she said that was so interesting to me was that it was due to the abortion mm-hmm. what happened, the 6-week mm-hmm. abortion ban in Iowa. And I thought that was, that highlighted a lot. And you see in Arizona, one of the big issues is immigration down there, right? And what she said was in Iowa, it's 65 and older that are turning for Harris. And what I thought was so interesting is someone pointed out that 65 and older individuals who did not have Roe v. Wade got Roe v. Wade, and now they've lost Roe v. Wade. Yeah. And so they have a little more passion when it comes to mm-hmm. this abortion issue. And I thought that was such an illuminating point. I wanted to make sure to say that here.
I'm going to go to Mark here. We're going to skip the break and, okay. and talk with you to give you the time you so rightly deserve.
Thanks. On reading the polls, I think it's actually gotten harder. Nate Silver talked about it this weekend. There is likely some herding going on. And what that technically means is that pollsters, particularly lower quality ones, are afraid that if they're off by a lot, they end up on the list of do not use mm-hmm. next time around. Mm. So everybody's pushing lot. Well, it's probably the case that lots of pollsters are changing dials to push their results closer to a split result, which so I think you're seeing, and I think that further just adds to the confusion. Nate Silver basically said if you line up a lot of the lower quality polls and you look how evenly split they are, even if the electorate were truly that evenly split, you couldn't get that many polls to accurately reflect it unless you're monkeying with the numbers, because you'd accidentally have small mistakes one way or the other in a normal circumstance. So I think we know what we need to know about the polls, which is they're so close, we don't know what's going to happen for sure. It's interesting, either side has a theory of the case. On the Republican side, it's that there's still this hidden, a shy Trump voter who won't admit it or is hard to get a hold of on their cell phone, but is going to come out again, sort of the Steve Bannon theory all over again. That's not surprising, because if you look at Trump and his predilections, he's sort of, as Libby explained, he's sort of diverting back to a lot of the fireworks and that were successful for him in 2016, against the advice seemingly of the hired political consultants that he has. So the fact that they're reverting to that case isn't surprising. On the Democratic side, their case for why they want to be optimistic tends to be the woman who's possibly going to depart from that of her spouse or the person that she, the man she lives with. And there's certainly some anecdotal evidence. I talked to somebody who was a call banking who said there were a couple women who said, I can't talk now, I'm with someone. And when mm-hmm. she reported that back at the end of the session, the captain of the call bank said, we're getting a lot of that. And there's actually been an ad run, not by the Harris campaign, but by an aligned pact that sort of said it's okay to vote differently than your spouse. And the Republicans have had, and those supporting Trump have had this visceral
right.
response to such infidelity on the part of a partner. I think that whole thing is interesting. An Ipsos poll not too long ago suggested that the number of men or women who plan to vote or have voted, I don't remember which it was, in contravention to what they've told their partner has not increased. So we'll see if that plays out. I'm not entirely sure how. I guess you just have to trust them.
What about the Bradley effect? Is it like they call it the Bradley effect? I heard someone speaking about it. The fact that people will say they're willing to vote for Kamala Harris because they don't want to be perceived as racist or sexist.
Yeah, that's the shy Trump vote. That's the same as the shy Trump vote. Okay. And that's what the Republicans are bringing on. Libby, I'll say one thing, about the enemies list. Not that I should ever tell anyone what to fear, but I'll tell you what I fear more. I fear more that Donald Trump, he's going to release all the J6, those who've been convicted, of many of whom assaulted law enforcement officers on J6. And I'm afraid that folks that see this country in very bifurcated terms, basically the Christian white nationalists, are going to be emboldened. And I worry what happens when the next, traffic, what are they called, road rage incident happens that would have ended with, special sign language, one party to the other. I wonder if an emboldened person ends it differently this time around. And I want to be careful, because you'll say, well, why is it you think the Republicans are going to misbehave? The evidence, the reason is because we have plenty of evidence for that if we look at January 6th,
mm-hmm.
That their political emboldened, that once they are politically emboldened, it can become dangerous for folks that they see as the other in this country.
Which is all of us.
Which is
all of us
except them.
Can I just tell you guys a quick story, really quick? This is happening in our house. Is my both of my children, on the bus, ages 10 and 12, have experienced the N word on the bus.
Really?
Towards them, and my son. It happened to my daughter first, and then it happened to my son. And my son didn't want to report it, and we had to talk to him. And you know what? Me and my husband had to tell him. You know, in our time growing up, I've never had that happen to me.
Right.
I've never had that happen to me. Someone say the N-word towards me.
Wow.
And it's happened to both my children in this society that we live in. And that's the emboldenedness I'm talking about,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, that's
that
much.
Someone can look at a child, another child feels like they've heard it in their house and they can say it now, where that would have never happened when I was growing up. I don't know. I don't say it wasn't there. But it's just a different society. And I say it because it's top of mind. We're dealing with it right now. And the schools were wonderful. But it's happening. And it's scary. And I think that's the fear that people are tapping into. That's the anxiety mm-hmm. that people feel when you have him come back into office after all this visceral talk this last weekend.
Let me tell you, there's a young student I know, and probably listeners to this program know, but I'm going to be a little bit careful here. Who went to a private school, and conditions were so bad, and sort of the foam on the wave was racist, and who sat his parents down after he complained and the school couldn't stop it, and said, there are 5 weeks left in the term. If you don't take me out, I'll get myself suspended. That happened last year. I mean, so to say mm-hmm. that this stuff, you know, and what engenders it in anyone's particular situation, who knows?
Exactly.
Right? But I think the trend looks like it's going the wrong way if you take a lot of the anecdotes I hear.
Well, the trend's been going along the wrong way for a long time. I don't think the trend has really ever stopped, right?
The trend's not going to go away
if
Harris wins either.
Right, no, it's going to
get
worse. Look, I was called a Christ killer on the bus because I'm Jewish, right? And this was, 40-something years ago, I'm 66, so 50-something years ago, right? I was called a Christ killer on the bus. It's, you know, tantamount. It's the same sort of hate, right? And the white Christian nationalists, that's what they think about us. They say they want Israel to exist, and it's only because they want it to there for the rapture, and that's it. They don't love Jews, and all their rhetoric is just BS, as far as I'm concerned. But this hate has been here. It's been simmering below the surface for a very long time. Trump unleashed it in 2016. Those 4 years were the ugliest in this country.
Mm-hmm.
It sort of went back under a rock a little bit, but not really, during the Biden years, the last 4 years. And if Harris is elected, which, God willing, that's going to happen— I think you will see another wave of vile behavior, racism, homophobia, anti-Semitism, all the different things, anti-immigrant, the whole nine yards, because these people, even if they've lost, feel emboldened and also they feel that they are right. And they don't want to learn anything other than what they've already been told to think, because that's what makes them comfortable. And it makes them feel like they're above these other people where they haven't been their entire lives. Because, as Trump always says, I love the uneducated.
But I will say this, just I know we have to go to that, and to echo what Mark said in the beginning, what I tell my kids is, and still we rise.
Yeah.
No matter what happens in that election, still we rise. And I think that's the message that you leave them with.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we will continue our conversation. We welcome your comments. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll continue our conversation on this Election Day Eve. We'll be back right after this.
She knows how to care for me. No lady sweeter.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Monday, the 4th of November, and we welcome you to the program and would love for you to be a part of it. Panel at WAMC.org if you would like us to include your thoughts. We can't get to everybody. We'll do our best. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. Paul writes to us and says, I agree with the idea we must have a plan after the election, regardless of outcome. This plan should include an assessment of why half the country supports a candidate that's so inflammatory and divisive. What deficiencies in our political system are causing Trump to attract half of our citizens? These answers will allow us to address the deficiencies and unite our country in the future. I understand the letter. My only sort of the thing that stood out to me in that is deficiencies in our political system. I think it's deficiencies in us. I mean, it's deficiencies in our culture. It's deficiencies in our society, as evidenced by the conversation we had before the break. I mean, sure, there are of course deficiencies within the political system, but what is it about us where that message is being, for want of a better term, preached and is being listened to?
You know what I scratch my head about a lot is a lot of people, when they say why they're voting for Trump, they say they go straight to the economy. I got a stimulus check. And I really do scratch my head because I feel like it has to be more, right? It has to be more than just the economy.
But the thing
makes
is,
that gives you the ability to vote for someone like that. I think that's where my disconnect is.
But also, these are the same people, I got a stimulus check, right, who rail against government programs.
Oh, yeah.
It's okay for me to get it, but not for you to get it.
Oh, yeah. So I'm always curious about that rationale.
Yeah.
I just can't.
Look, I think we know the reasons, actually. I actually, it's funny because I know them rationally, but they still don't, the light bulb in my head doesn't go on. But, I mean, clearly there's the sort of political science view of the two-party system where with 25% in one party, you take control of that party, right? So if we were in the United Kingdom, the United Kingdom's a bad example. If we were in Germany or somewhere, you know, a 25% faction on the general election would remain a 25% faction of extremists. And here it potentially wins the presidency. There is the sort of political economy view, and I think there's some truth to it, that people wrongly see some people have been left behind by globalism. And if you're in North Carolina and you used to make furniture and people talk about how great it is, you're scratching your head wondering what they're talking about. So I think there is that view, and it's accentuated by political alignment. But I also think underneath a country that's been evenly split for a long time, we have seen an educational and cultural divide where the more educated have lined up as Democrats and less on the Republican side. So in answer to the letter writer's questions, I think I have good and bad news in my view of the world. And Trump's presidency has been fueled by misinformation and conspiracy theory and the inability of the electorate to distinguish what's true versus what isn't, in large part. Education is the answer, but the bad news is that's a long-term project here.
Yeah, when we're not taught civics, really, when we're not taught how government works, you know, these people have a perception of government that isn't real, and they just don't understand how things work, and they don't want to understand anymore because they like to believe what they believe.
Here's a letter from Bo who says, Libby is right.
Oh, thank you, Bo.
For we folks a little older, public school in the 50s to early 60s and into the early 70s in the prevailing atmosphere of racism, disrespect, and random confrontational situations is nothing new. The fact that the experience of folks much younger than we are is testimony to the political and social progress that has occurred in America more recently. Are we going back? ? I'll let that hang in the air. Edgar says, you were talking about polls today. I don't pay much attention to polls. I and any of my acquaintances I ask have not been polled. Perhaps those are the numbers we do not recognize and swipe left on.
That is so true. I never pick up the phone. If they're calling your cellular phone, I'm not. They must be calling someone's landline.
And we don't pick that up
either. I would not pick that up if someone called from a random phone number. So I always wonder about who they're actually polling and who's the group.
Well, and I know there's a science to it, and I respect the pollsters, and mm-hmm. I respect the people who do it, and the polling institutions that we have, Siena and Marist in our region, are fantastic. I mean, they really do a great job. I'm sure I'm not alone to say, wow, you got all that from talking to 800 people? Like, wow, okay, that's interesting. I mean, that's a science.
Yes, but the other thing about the polls, and I'm not a polling expert, but they're talking to likely voters. And when you talk to likely voters, you're talking to people who have voted in the past. So you're not necessarily talking to the new registrants that are Swifties, Beyonce fans, Eminem fans, you know, and all the other celebrities who have said go out and register and vote. So they're not talking to that, and that's the youth part of the vote. And they're not talking to all the women who are coming out to vote because of the abortion issue. And I think we're going to see that as what those two factions, those two people who aren't necessarily being talked to on a regular basis, are going to move this. And Iowa is a perfect example of that. It really is. And Ohio is going to go for Trump. But remember, Ohio protected choice in a statewide referendum, you know, and so it's going to be an interesting night and a few days, but I don't think the polls are as reflective. I mean, let's just remember 2016. By 9:30, we were all in our beds with our heads under our pillows because they could not believe the polls were so wrong and that Hillary lost.
I'm going to try to find it here in a minute, but I was one of the things, and again, this is not, I don't want to be perceived as going after polling operations because I do have great respect for them, but I do think it is, I also think it's important to put it into a context and understand, but one of the things that I was really taken by is I'll find it during the break, but looking at where the polls had left it in 2016 and 2020 of in individual states saying that they felt that it was going to be Trump over Biden by 3 mm-hmm. percentage points mm-hmm. and how off they were. And if you look at it in those states, I mean, you wouldn't pass. I mean, they're not great. They're way off. Now sometimes they would say, yes, he's going to win by 3 points, and he'd win by 8 points. Okay. But it's still, I mean, that's off by a lot, you know? And I think that's really interesting to look at. Now, then the fundamental question becomes, what changes have taken place over the last 4 years to improve any error that had taken place that did not allow those numbers to be as accurate as they could have been. Although you don't see a major difference between 2016 to 2020. And by the way, I'm not talking overall. I'm just talking about the battleground states. And you wonder what major differences you're going to see from 2020 to 2024.
I also always think a good indicator, and what I like to watch, is where's the campaign? You know, where is Trump right now? Where is Kamala right now? Like, that tells me where they're concerned about. I think that, to me, is a better indicator, wouldn't you say, Libby, than just, you know, mm-hmm. following the polls?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, people will laugh, but Saturday Night Live, what she did with Maya Rudolph on Saturday Night Live showed her to be this human person. Trump is only a caricature on that show. A lot of people watch it. The cold open gets re-shared over and over and over again. You know, she showed herself as a warm human being, and that's where she was. And she got there at 8 and left at midnight, and because I read about it this morning, and you know, and did it, and then went back to the battleground states, wherever it was that she was going. And he's just doing weird things with microphones, babbling on and on, ranting and raving, not making any sense. And his people, the people who are standing behind him, look like, you know, Stockholm Syndrome.
Didn't he have Herschel Walker at a Georgia?
Yes.
I was like, what?
He's rabid.
I was like, he reached into your bag.
Yeah, but Herschel Walker almost won, almost won the Senate seat.
Almost
so,
won the Senate
so
seat.
But he did
it. And by the way, remember, this is silly season. So what's Trump trying to do? He's trying to get the young men off the couch. Herschel Walker probably helps there. That.
Yeah. Okay.
They also, just one of the things that to me just sums it up so beautifully is that the Trump campaign put out a press release yesterday saying that they had two new celebrity endorsements, Brett Favre and Mel Gibson. Well,
oh, my goodness. Right.
There we go.
Yeah, right. Mel Gibson, who can't vote
here. I'm going to have to read Mel Gibson's op-ed piece in the Times because there might be something in there that I hadn't thought about. Now, look, I want to say two things. One, on Saturday Night Live, I don't have a definitive view on this, but I've been thinking about it. I actually think I think there's a danger with what Saturday Night Live has done with Trump, because it's the same thing they did with Bush, with Dole.
They did it to Biden, too.
Hold on. But Trump isn't Bush or Dole. I mean, if we believe his ex-chief of staff and others, we need to think about him very differently in political terms. And Saturday Night Live, for all the lampooning, by putting him in the same category, in a way normalizes him in a form that might not be appropriate.
Well, they also invited him in the first campaign to host. So, you know, I think they're or right before the first campaign. So I think that, yes,
I just
differences
look,
there.
I think they ought to take a deep breath over there at NBC and just think about it. I don't know that I have a – I'm all for – if I sign up for comedy, whether that I turn on my TV or I buy a ticket, like you can do a lot under those circumstances, right? You can have the shock comic on if I know that's who's on and I've paid my money. You've got a lot of latitude. But in Saturday Night Live, there's a normalization that happens, and I don't know that we should be doing that with Trump. The other thing I'd say about Trump's closing argument, it just was, you know, it's funny because when you read about the case against Trump, you get reminded of the litany of issues, one of which is the man in 2 weeks is likely to be sentenced to prison. It's reasonably likely to be sentenced to prison time for a set of felonies that he committed, has been adjudicated as committing. So you're looking at a man who, when he's around the table and his advisors tell him, well, this might not break our way, right, is saying to himself, if I lose, not only financially does my world collapse, but I might be in an orange jumpsuit, not only in the New York case, but the other two federal cases that Smith is running aren't going to go away. It's so the fact that he's getting sort of that there's flailing going on should not surprise anyone. And I think it's important if you're talking to a Trump supporter or somebody thinking about it to say, hey, why do you think he's so emotionally desperate at this point in the campaign?
This is what I was talking about earlier. I did find it where biggest recent polling misses: Wisconsin by 9 points in 2020, Michigan by 6 points in 2022. Pennsylvania, 5 points in 2022. North Carolina, 6 points in 2016. 4 points in Nevada in 2012. Georgia, 2 points in 2016. And 3 points in Arizona in 2022. Those are, I mean, as you go down, they aren't as large. But when you look at 9, 6, and 5 points, that's a lot. It's a big difference. All right, let's go back to some letters, and then we'll take a break at the top of the hour. The increasing wealth gap, says Marion. Republican takeover of courts, gerrymandering, weakened unions, plus Democrats moving to the middle have left much of the working class worse off. So they're angry and hopeless, turning to conspiracy theories. We need to really address their needs and learn how to educate the public on critical thinking if it's not too late. And I think that is the question that a lot of us wrestle with, of what is too
late.
Right,
and the working class issue speaks to the Republican desire to destroy the unions, because when the unions were strong and were able to really educate their members, their members voted with them. Now you've got the Teamsters supporting Trump, right? And you've got a lot of other unions supporting Harris, but the membership isn't necessarily rallying around what the union is saying to do. And part of that comes from the degradation, the constant degradation of the need from the Republican Party of why do we need organized labor? They're ripping you off, right? You have a right to work. Well, that's what a union does, is give you the right to work. But they've used those three terms to undermine unionization in this country. And I think that that speaks to the working class as well.
It also highlights why Tariff Palooza is one of Trump's big...
Because nobody really gets it.
Tariff Palooza. let's see. Annie says, hi, panel. It's a lack and failure of our education system, I believe, that causes people to go for someone like Trump. Elementary schools have not taught civics. People don't know what the Constitution is or U.S. and world history. If people studied history, they would see what happens when someone like Trump gets into power. Mm-hmm. We need to put civics and history, true history, at the foremost of education, grade school, and high school.
We also need to educate people on how to be sensible consumers of social media. We have a few active generations in our political system that don't understand how to interact with social media and are being unduly influenced by it.
I mean, that's completely true. I mean, everyone wants to read the title and no one wants to read the actual, you know, content of an article. So if you have clickbait, that's why clickbait is so big right now, and people are believing what's in the title.
It's when you see things over the weekend, like RFK Jr. says we have to take the fluoride out of the water and we have to completely cancel the school vaccination programs. Now, I I have very strong thoughts on this, obviously, but I mean, I'm willing to have a discussion as to show me what the science is and is putting fluoride in the water the right thing to do for all communities and in what sense and what is the backlash. But for just that to come off and then Trump to quickly say, yes, that's exactly what we need to do, and I'll put you in charge of it along with making sure that women are taken care of, whether they like it or not, is bizarre to me. But
can I just say, Dr. Strangelove came out in 1964. Have you been drinking that commie water?
Yeah, that's right.
We are again. Make America great again, baby.
Make America have fillings again.
We'll take a break and we'll come right back after news with Ray Graff. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Mark Whitman, Sienna Freeman-Tolbert, and Libby Post making up our panel. Tomorrow is Election Day. Of course, we're spending most, if not all, the show talking about all things election-related, and there certainly is a lot as campaigns and, of course, the presidential campaigns continue today to make their final message heard and hopefully have it heard. So we look at early voting, and I found this to be pretty impressive. 75 million people have cast early ballots, making their voices heard amid worry about the process, the outcome, and democracy itself. 75 million is a lot of people, Libby, and this is good, right? I mean, just for democracy, this is good.
It's very good. I mean, when we look at what's going on here in just Albany County, I think it was 57,000 people had voted. It was a very good chunk of the electorate. People are voting early because they recognize the importance of this election from either side. I mean, people on both sides are voting early. There's no two ways about that. And it's interesting because Trump kept saying, don't vote early, don't vote early. Oh, no, vote early, vote early. And I'm going to vote early, but he didn't vote early. I mean, you know, he just lies through his teeth all the time. But I think that, it's a good number for now. I'm just looking up number of people voted in 2022. Voter turnout, or in 2020,
And it wasn't as available then.
Right. It was not as available as it is now. And people need to just get out and vote and do it. And I think this is what our democracy depends upon, is an engaged electorate, people going out and voting, however it is that you want to vote. And I think the numbers are showing that people are taking this particular year very seriously, because they know that democracy is at stake. Now, whether or not they care is another story.
The article that we're referencing from the New York Times is titled Weary, Troubled, and Nervous. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, that is me in a nutshell. Mm-hmm. America's flood the early vote. And the 75 million people have cast early ballots, making their voices heard amid worry about the process, the outcome, and democracy itself. And we touched on this last week, but a lot of people who are going to the polls are talking about safety of the polls. They're talking about how they feel and the concern they have.
So 75 million people have voted already?
That is the
right
word we have, yes.
158 million voted total in 2020. So that's almost half.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
That's crazy.
Early voting is over now. At least it's in New York, it's over.
I think it's over everywhere.
Yeah, I think so too. So tomorrow, everyone else is going to have to come out.
So here are the numbers. Projections from early voting indicate that overall turnout for the election will probably be between the roughly 60% of eligible voters who turned out in 2016 and 2/3 of eligible voters who voted in 2020. So that's huge.
It is huge. I mean, the 2/3 in 2020 is really big.
I mean, of course, pandemic, but yes.
Right.
You know, and we were talking earlier about, you know, the Beyonce voters, mm-hmm. the Eminem voters, the Taylor Swift voters. No, but what I'm saying is what those celebrities did is they didn't necessarily on social media sway anyone's vote. But what they do is they push people to go vote. They remind them to vote. And I think that's the impact of social
like
media.
Just like Brett Favre.
And Brett Favre. I'm sorry. Mel Gibson.
Right. Yeah, but the thing is,
we're inclusive here. See,
Taylor
that's what we're doing.
Taylor Swift can get people to vote and vote for Harris. I think that she's got enough of a sway over her minions or whatever, the fans.
Swifties.
That they will vote. They'll listen to her, and they
yeah,
will vote.
Libby.
I wonder if we'll ever know. They say that Oprah was worth 1 million votes in the Obama election. Uh-huh. It was Taylor Swift. Turned out that the rate of registration wasn't dramatically different after her announcement, even though there were a lot of people registering. It was about what they'd seen before. Can I talk to New York voters for a second? And also, this is part of my plan
yes,
B.
Yes, talk to us.
This is part of plan B.
Sit us down.
Well, for those of us who think, well, I have no say right in the presidential election, I would say the plan B, though, would argue that you do. Because if you think of what a bulwark the House can be against a potential runaway Trump term, if I will. And the House, the swing in the House is going to be decided in California and here in New York. And I would caution folks, you know, the history shows that politicians with an R next to their name, almost no matter what they say, once they get scratched or bitten by the Trump virus, mm-hmm. they tend to lose their souls. And so, can I be explicit about candidates in New
yes.
York? Is that okay?
Go ahead.
I mean, you've got these Mike Lawler types who a lot of what he says sounds pretty reasonable, but my understanding is he's still a Trump supporter. And if you look at some of his rhetoric around blaming Biden, saying, well, you would have had support for Ukraine if only you'd capitulated on the border like Donald Trump said mm-hmm. you should have. To me, when you go to the polls, you got to think long and hard about putting a national level Republican in a seat, given how many of them are zombie curious or have already turned into zombies. And I think it's really important to have that bulwark in place against the Donald Trump administration.
Well, it's the same with Mark Molinaro and Josh Riley. I mean, you've got Molinaro saying he won't vote for a national abortion ban, where he's voted 20 times for a national abortion ban. I mean, you know, and the great thing about Tuesday is all the ads are going to stop.
Oh,
yes.
All right. You know, and I make these some of these ads, but you know, it's like the negativity has been just astounding to me, and the lies, even though they put, you know, references to it. But, you know, that race, too, is the same sort of thing. You've got these people who are going to vote for Molinaro because he supports Trump, regardless. Now, it's a different district than the Lawler-Jones district, but Lawler didn't do himself any favors by showing up in blackface. Because he loved Michael Jackson, you know. It just doesn't, you know, cut it.
Look.
And that district has a sizable people of color voting block because of where it goes downstate. So we'll see what happens on both of those. I mean, Lawler is a toss-up now, but the Molinaro Riley is leaning Democratic, according to the Charlie Cook political report.
And so also, I said this when Mondaire Jones lost his election bid. He got redistricted out of his seat and then tried to find a new home. So he didn't technically lose his seat. But you know, if you look at his views, his background, and who he is, and who, the people and things that he cares about, there sure as heck should be room in the House of Representatives for more folks like him, frankly, no matter who his opponent is, let alone the fact that it happens to be Lawler this time around.
So let's stay on this, if we can, and talk about the House and the Senate. All 435 seats in the House of Representatives, 34 seats in the Senate, will be up for grabs. Republicans currently hold a majority in the House, while Democrats control the Senate, both by slim margins. Polls suggest the two parties could switch control of each chamber, with Democrats winning back the House and Republicans retaking the Senate. The two parties are fighting over a handful of seats that could make the difference in how much power they hold in Washington in the new year. And there are quite a few contests to keep an eye on, one of them being in Montana and John Tester. We also go to Texas and Ted Cruz. Tammy Baldwin in a tight race in Wisconsin. Sherrod Brown in a tight race in Ohio, and then the House majority runs, as the BBC says, the path to a House majority runs through New York State. Mike Lawler, Anthony Desposito, and Nick LaLota are all seeking re-election to a second term in the House.
And Brandon Williams.
Yes. These are just the people that were in this picture, I apologize.
All right, from Syracuse.
Yes.
And that seat, I mean, that's a seat that may very well go Democratic. It's Manion is running. He's a state senator, and he's running, I think it's John Manion. But the Speaker of the House, Mike, what's his name?
Johnson.
Thank you so much. Came to town and said, we're going to undo the CHIPS Act. In a city where they're going to be getting Micron and creating incredible amount of jobs. And then they had to, like, you know, step it all back. And it really hurt Williams' campaign. So, oh, too bad. I know.
I mean, the idea that they would even, you know, question the CHIPS Act when, you know, it's one of the ways to ensure that we have secure foundries here in our country that can do things for us.
Sorry.
No problem. This was when that happened. Actually, that's the one thing that made my husband roll over. And engineer, he's like, "Hey, this is not good." And I was like, "What do you mean, dear?" And he was just saying that because I don't follow the CHIPS Act. He was saying it's a really big deal because during 2020 we had a huge supply and demand issue with our supply chain, getting all of those chips and everything from China and Korea, Samsung. And so bringing them all in, and he was like, what we're trying to do here is have some of that here so it's secure, the federal government feels comfortable making chips. Like, that's so important that we have that here in our country. Also, it's also, you know, about research. And that's a big deal for us to maintain the intellectual leaders. Because you were talking about the tariff. One of the things that we have to realize is we may never make shirts that are cheaper than in China. But what we do have is we have advancements in technology that we have to make sure we monopolize and capitalize on and we stay in front of.
And that we keep safe.
Keep safe. So, yes. You know, while everyone wants to talk about the TikTok, I think we need to focus on the CHIPS Act and protecting that.
We need to keep those secrets safe for as long as we can. Eventually, all that stuff gets disseminated. The good news for the Republicans is that it's going to be really hard for the Democrats to hold the Senate. I think the estimation that Ted Cruz loses is, I would love to see it, but I think it's optimistic. And if you look at the Senate mirrors in some structurally the Electoral College, and that it gives disproportionate power to rural states, and the Democrats would have to keep six Senate seats and turn one, keep all six and turn one on a net basis if you assume that they've lost the presidency, because the president of the Senate is the vice president. That's unlikely to happen. I mean, there are places where Republicans have repeated their mistakes and nominated these fanatical Trump candidates like Kerry Lake, who's likely to lose even though it's in Arizona. But there aren't enough of those. And frankly, the Democrats' current configuration benefits from past Republican mistakes in that vein. And they are not going to make as many. They haven't made as many again with poor candidate selection. So it'd be really surprising to me if the Democrats kept control of the Senate. On the House side, it actually flips the other way. The House is the one body that Republicans don't benefit from the skew in the Electoral College or the rural skew in the way that the Senate is set up. And so in the House, the Democrats kind of need to do what they should do, which is win purple districts in the likes of New York and in California. And again, if you think about voter concern about what happens if there's a Trump presidency and the House is Republican, given that the Senate's likely to be Republican, I mean, obviously that leads to a lot more trouble for the Democratic agenda. The only halo, I would say, is that it looks like neither party is likely to prevail by more than five seats in the House. And as we've seen, because of the berserker conference within the Republicans, there is a natural circuit breaker for them to get anything done. But obviously, it would be better for the Democrats if they held that five-seat majority as opposed to the Republicans holding it. And that looks like that's less of a lift than the lift it would be in the Senate for that, not for the five-seat majority, but for the Democrats to keep any majority in the Senate. So Chuck Schumer is going to end up probably as the minority leader. And I know here in New York, given all that he brings home for us, that's really a disappointment. If you can see, my tongue is in my cheek. Yes, I don't know what good. That – never. Somebody will have to explain him to me someday.
Kathleen writes to us and says, I'm interested in what the panelists think might influence the three New York City House races the Democrats hope to take back, given the Eric Adams situation.
Well, I don't think any of the House seats in the city are up for grabs. So the immediate problem with Eric Adams for those seats, the Long Island seats, I mean, you know, I'm sure that the Republican conference is trying to tie Adams to the folks that are running, you know, out on Long Island. But it's a little bit of a lift.
Well, that's a huge
to
lift
to do that.
Because Adams spoke at the MSG rally. Mm-hmm. By the way, can we all spell pardon? I mean, my God, was that so obvious?
Right. And he hasn't distanced himself from Trump. So, I don't think that the Adams is going to have that much of an impact. But he's another one who's trying to keep himself out of jail.
Birds of a feather.
Does anyone?
I don't think he spoke. I just want to correct this. I don't think he did not speak.
He was just there.
Directly at
he was
the.
There, I'm sorry.
At the rally, and Trump mentioned him in a positive way, but he was not.
Thank
he
you.
Was not on the on yeah, the dais
no,
of the. Of the
no.
at that
but
rally.
He speaks favorably of Trump on a consistent basis. Is that a fair statement?
I mean, yes, and Trump is thanking him because he didn't, like everyone else in New York City, call him a fascist.
Right. Because, well, never mind.
Thank you for correcting me.
No, I just wanted to, because I know, I actually, the reason was I had to look that up because I was like, and because stranger things have happened.
That's right.
And,
he was mentioned.
At
and he
the
may
rally.
Have been there, I think.
David says, first, thank you for all you do. Voices of reason, a few and far between these days, so you're all greatly appreciated. There has been so much focus on presidential races this cycle. I really have not heard much about other significant races, and for, say, Senate, governorship, state houses, et cetera. We did just talk, I think our letters over our, we overlapped a little bit, but that's okay. Could you discuss a few of the other important races and where they stand? We all look to Libby.
Okay. All right. The entire Assembly and Senate are up in New York State, as they are every 2 years. There are some interesting races in this region. Pat Fahey is running for Neil Breslin's seat. Neil is stepping down after over 30 years of being the state senator from this area, and she is running against Republican Ted Danz, who is using bail reform, as most of the Republicans are, as a cudgel. I don't think it's going to work for him. He's also been incredibly transphobic and just repeating all the crap about Prop 1 in terms of, you know, oh, kids are going to be able to go to school and get gender reassignment surgery. No, that's not the case. Your kid can't be given aspirin at school without your permission. So getting
sex.
That's
actually really true.
Right, I know it is. And so getting sex reassignment surgery is ridiculous. Right now, transgender athletes can play in the sports that they choose. You know, it's not a problem. So get over that, folks. But he's been using some really ugly stuff. Really negative ads about Pat, who has served her community well and has done a very, very good job. And so, you know, that's one thing. We have the DA's race here. And yes, everyone knows I ran Lee Kinlan's race. We have a write-in by David Soares and the Republican Ralph Ambrosio. We don't expect there to be an upset there in Albany County. If you win the primary, you're going to win the general election for the most part. And then there's a state Senate race. I think it's the 43rd, Alvin Gamble versus Jake Ashby. And you've got Manita Sanghvi up in Saratoga running against Jim Todisco. And so you have that. The Assembly stuff in Albany, at any rate, Gabby Romero won the primary, and she's running against, or Alicia Purdy is running against her. Alicia ran against the mayor 2 or 3 years ago. She's like a Carrie Lake light. And she's not going to get elected in the Assembly District here. And then we'll see what happens across the state, whether or not the Assembly and Senate both can maintain their Democratic supermajorities. And I think that there might be a couple of swing seats. I know that the Senate is putting a lot of emphasis, the Senate Dems, on Long Island to maintain those seats down there. Because of the congressional races that are going on there as well. You know, there's a lot of organizing going on. There's Jim Skoufis. I think he will win. But then there's Reichland Melnick, I think is his last name. He was an assemblyman. He was a state senator. He, for a cycle, he got beat by the person who's in there now, and now they're re-litigating this and running against each other again. And it looks like Reichland, the Democrat, might very well pull it off. Yes.
I have a question.
Yes.
When I turn my ballot over,
yes,
and I look at Proposition 1,
yes,
let's leave aside all the things that people say it will do.
Yes.
Libby Post, if I vote for or against Proposition 1, what am I voting for or against?
You are voting to protect choice in the state of New York. It will put the right to choose in the state's constitution. It will put in the state's constitution the laws we already have outlawing discrimination based on race, religion, sexual orientation, gender identity, ethnicity and all the rest of that stuff. People have turned this into a red flag, red herring around transgender rights, and it's just absurd.
So
what they're saying. This notion of your parental rights are being taken away. Nobody's taking away anybody's parental rights here. You know, the only thing a young woman in New York State can do on her own without parental consent is get an abortion, because young women under the age of 18, there are times when they are pregnant and it's because of incest or sexual abuse by someone who's usually known to the family, because sexual abusers are usually known to the family. And so those girls, those young women, are able to get abortions without parental consent. Other than that, you can't get your tonsils out without parental consent. You can't get an aspirin from the school nurse.
I also like to highlight that if a young girl goes in to get an abortion, there is a process at that clinic for what they go through. No one's walking through and picking up an abortion off the They have to go through counseling. They have social workers there who talk to them. It is a process.
Right.
And it is grueling and is a terribly hard decision for a young girl to make at that age.
I want to go back to Mark just for a second here, but because I don't know if this is where he was headed, but if it is, I agree with it. The question is, is it well written?
Not really.
Because I swear to God, I mean, I looked at it and I just looked at it and looked at it and looked at it, and I thought, you really could drive a truck through it. I mean, I see all the misinformation coming out about it, but I'm like, well, yeah, you didn't do much to try to.
I think it was like this notion of, and you as a lawyer could probably answer this better than I can, but this notion of, we don't want to put the word abortion in here.
Yeah.
So we talk about reproductive health care.
Reproductive health care. I just wanted to leave it open.
Yeah.
And I think
reproductive health care includes IVF and all the rest of this stuff.
Exactly.
Got a minute, Mark.
So please don't get mad. I'm really being, like, I really want answers.
Okay.
So in New York State, young men are allowed to compete in girl sports if they identify. I mean, young men who are sexually men are allowed if they're gender.
No, if they are transgender, if they identify as transgender and are probably going through some kind of transition,
they're allowed to compete.
Yes.
Okay. Now, wait. I'm sorry.
Hold on.
And I might
be wrong.
I'm gonna make a
host decision.
Yeah, we have to go.
This is probably something that we should hold off on to discuss, because it may be
afterwards
larger than the 10 seconds
that
we have.
Right.
And I want to give it its full time. So we'll take a break. When we come back, we'll continue on this and other right after this.
I don't care if you're young or old. You ought to get together and let the good time roll out.
Remembering Quincy Jones this morning, who passed away yesterday at the age of 91. Our bumper music this morning has been that of from Quincy Jones. And you can see all of the tracks that we played on our playlist, WAMC.org/roundtable, WAMC.org/roundtable. Okay. So we're in the middle of a serious discussion where we were talking primarily about Prop 1 in New York State, and Mark, you had other questions that you wanted to clarify.
Well, I'm going to state how I understand it, and Libby will tell me if I'm right or wrong. And for those listeners, if I get it right, it's because I got some hints during the break. If I get it wrong, it's all my fault. In high school sports, transgender individuals are allowed to compete in women's sports.
And men's sports, Mark. It's not just trans. It's not just men transitioning to be women. There's women transitioning to be men.
I think
to
he comes
men.
In peace.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I get that. But you keep saying the women's sports.
Yeah, I do. I do highlight that because my understanding, and I've seen some cases of this with my son, is that women, or young women, girls, are generally welcomed anyway in young men's sports for a myriad of reasons.
Well, that's unusual.
No. And like, basically, people love to see it. It dilutes the nonsense in the boys. Obviously, the locker room, you have to go change in the bathroom part of the locker room, but the nonsense in the boys' locker room changes. The demeanors of the team changes. It's good for...
Well, maybe they should have had some women on the teams up north where I think it was George, and there was a sexual assault.
It's actually, it works better than you would. And also, it's good, for instance, my son in hockey, it's good for him to get consistently bested by people of either sex, right? And learn that's okay to, that happens, it's okay to accept. Anyway, so you're telling me that law, if Prop 1 passes, that law then gets enshrined in the mm-hmm. Constitution.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I'm good now. I honestly read that proposition like Joe did. I read it again, and I'm glad you clarified it for me.
I just have to say that the number of folks that are making this into being the sports issue, when the number of transgender folks who actually go to compete in sports, like in that scenario, is so small.
And we're talking about high school.
K through 12. But the thing is, the numbers are so small, but we're demonizing an entire group of people who just want to live their lives because of that. And people need to get a grip. It's K through 12 sports. It's not the NFL. It's not the World Series. It's, you know.
It's not the Olympic boxers.
Right. Exactly. So come on, you know. These are kids who are struggling with their identity. They deserve to be able to live life the way they want to live it.
Well, the other thing I would say is when I see someone at this stage of the election hold up the transgender card, I go back to my conclusion. This is silly season. Mm-hmm. We're trying to motivate our bases. And if you're Trump, right, Trump or Trump lights around the country, you know, you've got the white Christian nationalists. What you got in 2016 were the people who saw the Democrats as a common foe or enemy. And Trump and the Republicans broadly are trying to recreate that. So I get how this is being used.
Look, the LGBT community has been a wedge issue in this country since 2000. Karl Rove used marriage equality as an issue in the 2000 election, and it helped get George Bush elected. We are always the target because we are a minority that people just can't wrap their heads around. Many, many straight men can't wrap their heads around why a man would want to be gay and give up their male privilege, right? And then you take that to the transgender community, and a man is becoming a woman and really giving up their male privilege. They just can't wrap their heads around it. And on the other side, they can't wrap their heads around women becoming men and having more power than they might have. So it's really, you know, we have become a cudgel, a political cudgel. We have been. It will take another generation, just like it took a generation with marriage and gay rights. It'll probably take another generation to normalize politically the trans community so that it's no longer seen as being the other. Your kid is growing up with trans kids and they don't care. You know, my kid grew up with Will and Grace. It's the Will and Grace generation. They saw it normalized on television. I grew up, there was nothing, absolutely nothing to say to me, you're okay. And so, you know, we can't let, you know, the anti-trans, anti-LGBTQ community dictate how we live our lives and the legal protections that we have. And that's what they're trying to do. This whole parents' rights argument is just fallacious.
So let me ask this question, and I have largely avoided prognostication on this program over, well, really, since we started talking about election this cycle. But do you think it'll pass?
I'm hopeful that it'll pass. I think that the state will go blue, and with that, this prop will get passed. I think the 2020 constitutional thing around voting rights, they didn't do a great job on that either, but it was not a presidential year. It was a congressional year, and it was a midterm election, and it was midterm for the Democrats and blah, blah, blah. So
this is going to amend the state constitution,
mm-hmm.
and you just need a majority of the electorate to do that?
You have to do it twice. So here's the way it works.
Thank you.
In order to amend the state constitution, you have to have the proposal passed twice in two different legislative cycles. So the reason why it's on this year's ballot is because this is the last year of the two-year legislative cycle. The legislature is all up for election. It will be back on the ballot either in 25 or 26 to pass again. And then it goes, once it passes twice, then it's in the state constitution.
And it doesn't go through the legislative bodies.
It already did.
Oh, it's
it
passing?
Had to go through the legislature.
And what did it have to pass by there? I'm sorry.
Oh, just a simple majority.
Okay, and that's got to pass in two general elections, or two elections.
Then it's got to pass
two
in
state elections.
Two state elections, but in different legislative cycles.
Got it. Thank you.
This is great. I love Schoolhouse Rocks.
I know. This is great.
I know. I watched that
this
a lot when
I
was
a kid. You just said,
I just learned a lot. I said, this is great.
You just set down the standard. Now we got to get a listener who puts this to lyric.
Yeah. You see what happens when you're taught civics in school?
Exactly.
I know. I didn't know you were gonna do it on the radio. That's very great.
You know, I teach you how to run campaigns. I gotta know how to do this.
I'm sorry. I apologize for. Thank you for indulging me. But I read enough stuff that if I don't know, I'm feeling pretty comfortable asking.
Most people don't know that they're gonna vote on it again.
But let me just ask, and I realize I'm going a little bit backwards here.
Right.
What?
I think so, yeah.
What'd you say?
I'm just saying, I am right.
Okay.
I'm asking the lawyer. I am right.
I'd say you're always right.
Right.
If you're I'm thinking of one particular candidate, Mike. But let's say you're a candidate, you're a Democratic candidate, you're running, and it's a close race, mm-hmm. and you're in a purple to red district, mm-hmm. and suddenly there, because this is on the ballot, you're immediately being painted with that brush. How are candidates dealing with that?
Well, I think it's each individual candidate. I don't think that, Ted Danz is trying to paint Pat Fahey with that brush.
Yeah.
It's sort of purple, but it's more blue purple because it's got Amsterdam and Schenectady.
Like I'm seeing it in the Kerry Warner race.
Right. In the Kerry Warner, but she's safe. She's safe. Yeah. She's not going to go anywhere. She's the incumbent and has done, a very good job. I'm sure Kerry, I'm not really following the race, but I'm sure she's not like making it the cause célèbre of her election.
They are,
but she's focusing on the real issues that are impacting people there. The economy, the horse stuff, making sure,
the horse stuff.
You know what I mean?
Right.
The track, making
yes,
sure
correct.
That the track is protected, blah, blah, blah. And she's a business person and she really does focus on business. And so they can make it all they want. But the other part of this is this. You can't get elected by just trashing the other person, especially on the local level. You have to give people a reason to vote for you before you start trashing your opponent. Okay? I know that Trump is an anomaly and the outlier to this, but on the local level, if you don't give people a reason to vote for you before you start saying don't vote for the other guy and they're the devil incarnate, you're not going to win.
So I just want to take the final minute and a half of our program to remind folks of two things. One is that WAMC's news team will be out in full force tomorrow night and will be covering the election. We'll have the NPR coverage mixed in with WAMC's news coverage, and we will be following all of the local races as well as the national races.
I have been corrected by Jimmy Vilkind.
Yes.
And I'll take it from him.
A fine person.
It has to pass twice in the legislature and then just one referendum. So that's what it is. I knew there were two votes.
We are.
So the legislature had to vote on it in two separate legislative cycles.
Oh, so this will do
and
it.
And then one. Yeah, so this will do it. So thank you, Jimmy.
Thank you, Jimmy Vilkind.
For correcting me. I sit corrected.
Or according to the Google.
According to Google.
New York could also hold a constitutional convention.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Did we try that?
Yeah. And everybody said no because you never know what could happen. So I stand corrected.
Fact
Jimmy's
checked
right.
by Jimmy Vilkind. That's okay. Good.
All good.
All right. What I was saying is we have incredible coverage coming up from our WAMC news team tomorrow. I mean, obviously, they're covering the races today and will be all day tomorrow into the night. NPR coverage will be offered as well. and will be covering all of the races all over the country. Also, on Wednesday morning, we're going to be having a WAMC special roundtable panel live from the Linda, 9 to noon. We have, I think, I think we have 18 panelists who are going to join us at various times. And we're going to be talking about all of these important issues. If you don't have your seat yet, you can still do it. You just have to donate, and you can do that by going to WAMC.org. WAMC.org. It's 9 o'clock on Wednesday morning, and we hope you'll join us. Thank you all. We'll be back right after this.
See you on the other side.